Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We really got to bring the fine jar into play.
Okay, but it can't be for like yesterday was a one-off
random
thing.
You say a word on the air that you have to dump, you pay a fine.
So what would be, what are two things, one thing that each of us does?
You show up late for a segment, you pay a fine.
That was a random thing. What are things that you and I do regularly that you feel would be fine-worthy? For me, is it esoteric references like the monkey's paw?
Yes, using words that nobody understands.
So basically, generalized elitism.
Pompous.
Pompous, arrogant, elitist behavior. What about for you?
I mean, I'm the judge of the kangaroo court.
Oh,
I can't get fined.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. How about gratuitous Haskins discussion?
I'll be broke if we...
You can't be the judge. It's not fair. The kangaroo court has to be egalitarian here. We all have to be able to call
There's
BS.
A fine.
Everybody knows what egalitarian
means. Oh, yeah,
means.
Everybody knows. Steiny, what's the definition of that word? Egalitarian.
I couldn't tell you.
There you go. Pay the fine, Chris.
Unbelievable. Hey, Steiny, look it up one of these days. Read a dictionary. Sorry. That was elitist, too.
Yep.
Oh, God. Here's 20 bucks.
I still owe Craig money.
So do I. Craig actually cleaned us out in the old post-show putting contest this week.
So I brought it up by accident yesterday at dinner, the putting contest loss, and Amanda goes, so that's why you're always late? For things, and I'm like, oh, it only takes 5 minutes, and we don't do it that much. And she said,
two more lies.
And she said, but you just said you did it today and yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anywho, Brian Burke, Penguins president of hockey operations. This comes from Sirius XM NHL Network Radio. They were kind enough to pass this interview onto us. We have like the best moments of it. Trying to get the exact name of the show right so I can give them proper attribution, which is something I probably should have done before the show, and the fact that I'm doing it now on the air would be finable if the kangaroo court was actually in play, but it's not because we haven't come up with anything yet. So the show is, let's see here, Malzy, NHL Morning Skate.
Okay.
Gord Stellick, the former Maple Leafs GM, just like Burke, a former Toronto
Gord's
GM.
Gord's been on this show before.
And Scott Laughlin is the other guy's name.
Okay.
So this is Brian Burke. It starts, actually, this is interesting. The interview starts with a question about the NHL getting back on the ice for next season.
I would have said a month ago we were on track for a normal season. I'm not convinced at all that we are. I'm not convinced they'll allow full buildings in all jurisdictions. I'm not convinced they'll allow free movement of teams. I'm not convinced at all we're going to get back to normal. And unless people start behaving rationally, I'm convinced that we're not. That being said, we had this thing almost licked, I thought. And I thought we'd turn the corner. It wasn't gone. It will never go away. But I thought we had it under control where pro sports could operate freely. Not convinced so now. But
from the Penguins organization.
All right, let me pause it right there for a second.
There's something about a guy who's as gruff and no nonsense as Burke has a reputation for being, shooting it straight like that. And I actually happen to agree with him about like being very leery of like whether any of these arena sports, especially where it's indoors, are going to be able to go back to what they want to do. There's something about hearing him say that that you just like, I just wish you could like beam that out to everybody.
But he also is smart enough to realize that the NHL is dealing with 7 franchises in Canada, too, where their standards are much higher than ours. And
yeah, but I think he's talking there about like everything, not just their higher standards, but like sort of taking note of what's happening
sure.
in this country right now.
But my point is, I don't think even though hockey is everything to Canadians, mm-hmm. I don't think that their government is just going to back down and open things up for the NHL and make, you know, huge exceptions to their rules where things go back to normal and, you know, you have those teams playing American teams from October through the end of the playoffs next year. That's how I think
Canada is,
that's the unique situation the NHL is in compared to the other three major sports.
Well, Canada, it's going to be, if you look at it, it's going to be more like Canada deciding, yeah, to keep the U.S. teams out for Canada's own safety because what is the magic number they always say, 70% of the population or whatever? At least 70% up there has one dose, and they're closing in on 60% of their population. Having ramped it up way later than we did, mm-hmm. they're doing a better job. Like, it sounds like Canada is going to have a better handle on this very soon than we do.
How difficult is it here in 2021 to try to go out and improve your team?
Well, the key to managing the cap is not that it's flat. It's having space. I mean, the teams that have greatly improved their teams had cap space. And we're all playing by the same rules, flat cap for the coming season, and I believe at least two more. And if it's not flat for two more, it'll be an artificial increase of $1 million. So I think the league has figured out with the union a way to raise the cap $1 million in a given year so that it's not flat forever. But otherwise, I think it'll be flat for at least two more years. And the key is having space. So we had no space. We think we made a couple of good pickups with the space that we had. But some of the teams have taken advantage of their space and added big pieces.
How do you balance?
Okay, we had no space.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the Penguins have been so
blasé,
stagnant and very, very much a non-player in free agency.
Basically, not what they used to be.
I just don't recall those comments when the season ended. I don't. I don't remember in the immediate aftermath of the Islanders series when questions started getting asked about where the Penguins go from here. I don't remember then. Brian Burke and Ron Hextall saying, guys, this is going to be extremely difficult for us because our cap situation is so screwed up. I don't. I remember, let's get bigger and tougher. You know, we're not that far away. We got to make some moves to, you know, obviously win series like this. But I don't remember this whole, hey, we're actually in, we're basically tied into a knot. Into a knot that we can't get ourselves out of because of the salary cap.
Well, I think that's a byproduct of maybe if you're Brian Burke and Ron Hextall, you probably thought maybe there's a deal that'll present itself that we think can do all the things we're saying we need to do. And as soon as one of those deals doesn't present itself because those players are coveted and usually cost a lot of money, well, the salary cap was a problem, in parentheses, because all the guys we really would have liked to add cost a lot more than we could afford.
Pittsburgh, when you have not so good exodus from the playoffs, how do you balance those two things, not getting too high and not getting too critical?
Part of it is we're on the backside of two cups. So people can say, oh, you went out in the first round 3 years in a row. The guys who were here before me are wearing two rings when they buy gas. So guess what? When you're in a hard cap system, that's what normally happens. But we still have the key pieces in place. And we think if we'd gotten quality goaltending, we were a better team than the Islanders. That sounds like I'm hanging it on Tristan Jarry. I'm not. Tristan Jarry was the reason we won the division. He was outstanding all year. Casey DeSmith as well. And Tristan Jarry, I think, is going to be a real good goaltender in the future. If you go back and look at a lot of goaltenders, like Marc-Andre Fleury, for example, go back and look at his first couple playoffs. Goaltenders often struggle early. It's high pressure. It's difficult. I think Tristan Jarry is going to be just fine. But we didn't look at that series with the Islanders and say, oh, my God, we need to overhaul our team. We outplayed them for significant stretches of that series. So we don't think we were as far away as some people do looking at the results.
Can I?
It does sound like he's hanging it on Tristan Jarry. Sorry. Like when you say we were the better team, our goaltending let us down.
No, I know. But then he absolutely, I think, told what I would call half-truths about Tristan Jarry and what he means to the Penguins. The first one is, we don't win the division without Tristan Jarry. I would respectfully disagree with that. Did Tristan Jarry have maybe a 10 or 15 game streak where he was outstanding? Sure. But the idea that some other goaltender wouldn't have been able to do that for them is laughable. He was not a guy that carried them. That, to me, is just...
Well, he can say, though, that because what you just said there is technically a hypothetical. Yes, a lot of other goalies could have done that. If Andre Vasilevsky's on their team, sure, but he's not. For the goalies on their team, Tristan Jarry, about a quarter of the season was very good.
But Burke makes it sound like Tristan Jarry was like some team MVP, and no, I just that's to me, disagree
that's,
with that.
That's Burke couching. That's Burke very quickly, because he's a media-savvy guy, realizing that he just crapped all over Jarry in the playoff series, and very, very swiftly adding in some sort of compliment to lighten that sting.
And the other thing that I don't think is really all that accurate is when he says, let's go back and look up Marc-Andre Fleury as proof that somebody could struggle early in their careers, right, in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So 2007, the Penguins lose in five games to the Senators. Fleury is not very good. His save percentage is under 900.
Let me steal your thunder. Marc-Andre Fleury in his second playoff series was 08, he was better than 09. He was awesome that whole playoffs.
Yep.
Then he was still very good in 09. So he had a cup-winning performance
at 23 and 24 years old.
Right. He had a cup-winning performance where he was quite good, and then he had a performance the prior season where he was even better. I don't think people recall that Detroit team in 08 was just a juggernaut. The only reason that series even got out of a sweep and got to six games was because of Fleury. And so there was real performance that was already documented.
And it's also revisionist history to like bring up Fleury not being good, say, in his first playoff series and his maiden voyage, and it like being a reflection on him, and that's the reason why the Penguins didn't beat Ottawa. They were just outclassed and outplayed thoroughly in
that
series.
Ottawa was a total unit that year. Yeah. They went to the final.
And lost to
Anaheim.
Burke's Ducks.
Yeah. I remember that Ottawa team. The narrative, the narrative out of this series right now was Penguins team that was good enough to beat the Islanders who went to the brink of the cup final this year.
Yep.
But their goalie betrayed them. I distinctly remember being a college senior and the narrative around the Penguins who got whooped out, you know, by the Senators was, the Penguins were clearly a year away, maybe two. This was a useful foray into the playoffs for a very young core of players.
Has it been proven that maybe you just need to have that regular season team and you need to do the extracurricular type things, the intangibles, at playoff time in order to win?
I don't think you need a straight top six, bottom six, but I do think you need a top nine, bottom three, or a top eight, bottom four. I do think you need grunts. I do think you need people at block shots, kill penalties, finish checks, fight when it's needed. That's becoming increasingly rare. But I do think you need a blend to win, even in the new and friendly National Hockey League. And I think the teams that have won it, I think we're the last team, Pittsburgh, we're the last team to win with a small, skilled team. Every team that's won since has been big and powerful. And I think the game is evolving. I think you look at the expansion draft and look what Seattle did. They picked a big team. I think you see teams all around trying to get bigger. So I think there is a place for physical hockey. Thank Christ.
But to which end are the Penguins, like, they're not doing much to make themselves bigger and tougher? Here is Burke saying the Penguins model that they won back-to-back cups with is now pretty much outdated. And here's what Seattle did as the most recent proof that that's just not how you build a hockey team anymore. And oh, by the way, we went out and we re-signed Dominic Simone and Evan Rodriguez in the last few days. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, that's, to me, a contradiction. This is Brian Burke from SiriusXM NHL Network Radio. He's on a show called The Morning Skate. This is, I think, the next question, Chris, is about like the moves that they did make, the bigger ones.
Brock McGinn, Danton Heinen, talk about two new pieces to Pittsburgh.
Well, we didn't want to lose Brandon Tanev. Brandon Tanev, he's just a joy to have as a teammate. His practice habits are excellent. He's enthusiastic. He plays a game like every game like it's a game seven, and he chases people all over the ice and hits them. We didn't want to lose him, but his contract was, he had 4 years left at $3.5 million. And that's why we exposed him. And Seattle made a good pickup. The contract might not be perfect, but the player is. Now we're looking, how do we replace a player with some grit in him, some foot speed? And we looked at Brock McGinn. We all love this guy. We were like, we think it's an upgrade on Tans, and we think he'll do more. He's not quite the same player. To add that player at a lower salary. And then we think Danton Heinen is a really good hockey player with great skills. He's kind of stagnated the last couple of years. but we see him as a third liner that can kill penalties, can chip in some offense, skate like the wind. So we're pretty happy with yesterday. Even people say we're shopping at Kmart, not at whatever you call it. I can't think of a high-end store because I'm shopping. We're happy with what we picked up yesterday.
Okay.
Can skate like the wind.
Here's the money quote, I think, from that. So Tans is Tanev's nickname, mm-hmm. right? I mean, a little inside
seems
hockey
like a,
there.
Seems like a safe bet.
We think Brock McGinn is an upgrade on Tans?
Yeah, no.
Upgrade, Chris.
So why'd you pay him less money than Tans was making?
Not like a
decent replacement. Yeah. We think we got better with this.
We think that Brock
then
McGinn...
Then why were you sad about losing Tanev to the Kraken in the expansion draft, and why did you laud them for making a good pick? If you think that the guy you signed for cheaper than that guy was
is better,
why are you telling the Kraken made a good pick? We hated to we didn't really want to lose him, but we had to because he was more money. That
we think he'll do more.
Okay. You know what? The only way I could squint without having watched Brock McGinn enough to be what I would call a Brock McGinn expert, the only way I could squint and say maybe it ends up being true is. There was a certain part of Tanev's appeal that was tied into just him being like an obvious wild man on the ice, right? Like he visually was like that cult hero type of player. Maybe there's a chance Brock McGinn is a very close replica of that, plays a tough game, but because he doesn't have the wild-eyed drifter, I saw a ghost headshot, people don't gravitate towards him. But I don't know. I think most of Brandon Tanev's appeal was that he went out there and kicked ass and people liked watching it as a fourth liner.
It seemed this year in the playoffs that the whole a stick to a hand was called and cross-checking was kind of debatable in a lot of people's opinions. Is there need to be a crackdown on that in your opinion, or what's your thinking about that?
No, I don't think there needs to be a crackdown. Here's the problem with the playoffs. We've always elevated the bar in the playoffs. It's always required more to constitute a foul worthy of a penalty in the playoffs. It's always been that way. We've always wanted it that way. We want the players to decide. Not put the whistle away, not throw the rule book out, but raise the bar. I thought the officiating in the playoffs was really good 90% of the time, but there were some spectacular misses, and those are the ones the media focus on. You go to the first intermission, say Corey Perry gets high-stick. You go to the break, they're going to replay that 10 times and show it was clearly a five-minute penalty, or four at least, that was missed. They're going to show it 10 times. So I think an unfair focus shifted on the officiating. I thought overall the officiating was really good. So, like, to me, I don't think we need a crackdown on. So I don't think we need a crackdown. Were some cross checks not called that should have been penalties? Yes, but under the current standard, they should have been penalties. I don't think we need to raise the bar.
Okay. I mean, we were watching Jake Guentzel and Sidney Crosby basically get their ass kicked by the Islanders, and the president of the team says,
"Nope."
I think it's the media that made too much of this stuff.
Man, that's most of the time.
Bummer. He did say 10% of the time the media obsessed over calls that didn't get made, but that the officiating overall in the playoffs was pretty good.
That's like old boys network, truculent. Player loving Brian Burke coming out of the woodwork there. I don't like that.
Past season. I mean, that really makes it so you have your work cut out for you going into 22.
No, Florida's gotten better. I think Flyers got better. So, like, it's, you know, we've been in the playoffs 15 straight years. No other team in the NHL has done that. And people should focus on that. This has been a team whose standard is excellence, and we intend to maintain that standard. It's going to be tough. But a lot of teams have gotten better. Tampa has been the flag bearer in the East, and they've won two cups and deserved them both. But they've had significant personnel losses, so let's see if they can do it again.
I think you need to be able to believe and say two things. That the Penguins have had incredible success in a capped era where they have won three Stanley Cups, which ties the Blackhawks for the most, and they deserve all kinds of credit for that. They're the only team that's gone back-to-back, and they never have a down year where they miss the playoffs. Mm-hmm. However, at the same time, you can say right now that their offseason has been terrible. And
how could you say it's been anything but?
Right,
like,
so,
where are the people saying this is a great offseason?
Well, I think people say, you know, give them credit for their past successes and ignore what they're doing now.
They deserve credit for that, but that's mutually, that and what are they doing right now? Mutually exclusive things. The only way that they're not is that they kept going for it every year with the previous GM, and now the cupboard is bare. They don't have a lot of draft capital. They have virtually no minor league to speak of. And they're only going to be relevant, for as long as Sidney Crosby, especially, can really carry them.
Text us on the Edgar Snyder & Associates fan. Text on Edgar Snyder reminds you to text responsibly. Coming up next, we did the defensive side of the ball yesterday. You can find a video of it up on 93.7thefan.com on our fan cam. There's a mention. PM Team Power ranks the Steelers' offensive starters, 1 through 11. Will Chris Mueller put Big Ben 11 on his list? You'll have to stay tuned next. The Chicago Cubs are trading Chris Bryant to the New York Yankees. So the fire sale continues for the Cubs. Bryant to the Yankees, Rizzo to the Yankees, Javier Baez to the Mets, Craig Kimbrell to the White Sox.
Who's got the Chris Bryant story?
Wait a minute. Did I just get duped by some phony baloney site?
Did you get duped by Jeff?
Hold on. Let me look that up here.
Pass in.
Let's see.
I think you did.
Oh, thank you.
You got duped, didn't you?
Yep.
You're not the only one.
Well, that's why you're here, Malzi.
One big MLB insider also got duped by the fake Jeff Passan account.
Okay, so Chris Bryant is still a Cub.
Correct.
Carry on.
Yeah. Trying to keep you from...
Why do people create fake accounts on days like this? I know,
Kangaroo,
I got to pay a fine.
Pay the fine.
I should pay a fine.
Cardinal sin right there. You got fooled by a fake account. You got duped.
But you covered up for me, so I almost feel like you, if you had to pay a fine
take
previously...
Take my money out of the jar.
Yeah.
But yours is still going in.
Yeah. All right, so this was a big hit yesterday. We power ranked the Steelers' defensive starters 1 through 11.
This was tough. This was much tougher than that.
And now we're doing the offensive starters. Let's go.
You do the little beatbox like somebody that's tried it.
Power rankings.
I got the power.
Pretty good.
All right, Malzi, go ahead. You're first up here.
All right, we're going 1 to 11, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or do you want me to start from the bottom and work my way up because of the Roethlisberger factor?
No, we always go 1 through 11 here. Same rules.
All right, believe it or not, now I'm ranking them based – hold on. Am I ranking them based on what I think they're going to be this year?
Why are you making it so complicated? What they are right now, Malzi. Not looking 5 or 6 years down the road.
Fair enough. Number one on this list, perhaps surprising to people, Chase Claypool.
Oh.
I think it's a guy ready to blow up in his second year in the league. He seems to want more responsibility. Yeah, he had the little parking lot skirmish or whatever, but you
literally
can't...
kicked a guy in the head.
Good
imagine
athlete.
If that were your head.
No, his foot would be broken.
True.
6'4", 230, and can actually play as fast as it looked like he could play. That guy looks like somebody that could break out into superstar mode. I want to see them integrate him into the offense in more ways. I think he's their best player. Number two, Steelers offensive power rankings. Remember, this is all based on the first depth chart that the team released here. Juju Smith-Schuster might be another surprise to people. He was not dynamic last year. He was more of a third down running back and possession receiver, but guess what? He played that role well. Slot receiver is
now he wants to play outside.
And he's not getting many chances to, and guess what? He's still going to put up numbers if they put him in the slot where he is very, very good. And I think Juju has to realize that if he puts up numbers, even if it's from the slot, he'll still get a lot of money. Number three, probably should be number one in terms of how good he is at getting open. The problem is he's a wide receiver, and job description number one is catch the freaking ball. That's why Deontay Johnson, who's always open and often dropping, is only number three on my list.
Okay.
Fourth best player.
All wide receivers so far.
Biggest position of strength, in my opinion. Najee Harris, number four.
Say what?
Four? Listen, I'm not getting sold on like Mark Caballi comparing him favorably to prime Le'Veon Bell in certain aspects. But it is pretty obvious, no matter who you talk to, that he is head and shoulders above the rest of the running back room. They're going to give him every chance in the world to be an effective offensive player this year. This is almost project. It is projecting. He's never played a snap of NFL football, but I think he'll be pretty good.
Okay.
Ben Roethlisberger, number 5.
Oh, boy.
Don't know if people were expecting him higher or lower, whatever,
I think much
on my
lower.
List. Yeah, but I mean, you'll understand why he wasn't that much lower in a minute. Listen, when he's playing in game manager mode, kind of game manager plus, when he's taking what's given, when he's not trying to be a guy playing hero ball at almost 40 years old, he can still be all right. The problem is he tries to do that crap way too often. That's why I can't put him any higher on this list.
I thought he was too conservative last year, but go on.
I'm talking about, like, the Tennessee game, the Baltimore game. I'm talking
they
about
won those games.
I'm talking about throwing the ball just in general as much as he was. And all he's right. also too rigid and inflexible. Doesn't want to go under center, all that stuff.
Okay.
Kevin Dotson, number 6 on the list. I think he's the best lineman they have coming back. I think he's going to be the best lineman of the five that group of 5 this year, assuming they're all healthy. So he's 6th. Eric Ebron, 7th. Deontay Johnson, but a tight end, and also he's not much of a blocker. Mm-hmm. I think the Steelers would love to see Pat Freiermuth overtake him on the depth chart, even if it's only in an informal sense.
Okay.
Trey Turner, number 8. He sucked last year, but he was hurt. And compared to the rest of that O-line, he's got the best track record. So he goes there. Our buddy Zach Banner, I'm sorry, is at number 9. Zach's, if he's listening, going to want to kick my ass for this.
And
he's,
he could.
He certainly could without lifting a finger practically. Zach's played how many snaps in the NFL as a starting right tackle? Under 60? Right?
Yeah, he played 1 game.
I mean, I can't put him any higher.
Okay.
Chukwuma Okorafor is 10th because Chukes lost a battle to Zach Banner, and yet we've been fed
a line. But he's a natural left tackle, Malte.
Oh, my God! We've been fed a line that because he's such a great, nimble athlete, he's actually a better fit for left tackle. Then why didn't he beat Alejandro Villanueva for that job last year? I'd love to know. I have never heard a guy who lost a camp battle 1 year be talked about as glowingly as he has been this next year.
And dead last?
J.C. Hassenauer, because he's probably not going to be the starter because it's pretty clear they want Kendrick Green to win that job, but he ain't number 1
on the
depth chart.
All right, so recap 1 through 11 quickly.
Claypool, Smith-Schuster, Johnson, Harris, Roethlisberger, Dotson, Ebron, Turner, Banner, Okorafor, Hassenauer.
Okay, here's my power ranking Steelers offensive starters 1 through 11. Numero uno. From the Alabama Crimson Tide.
Whoa!
Rookie running back Najee Harris.
Whoa!
Yeah.
Woohoo! Whammy!
Number 1.
So wait, we both hated the pick, and yet we both have him ranked highly.
We see rookie running backs.
They come in and produce.
Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey. I could continue, go on and on and on and on. My thing is I just don't like their offensive line. So even though I think he's a really good player, I'm not sure he's going to have the kind of production. I don't think he'll have the kind of production that fans want. But I think he is their best offensive player right now. Number 2, Chase Claypool.
Okay.
Got to stop dropping the ball. Let's see a little bit more of the route tree and not just have to be a guy that goes
he's
downfield.
He's requesting it.
But he's just a freak.
6'4", 230, runs like a deer.
I think he's Martavis Bryant with a better head on his shoulders. Number 3, Deontay Johnson. Hang on to the friggin' ball again. But he gets open.
All the time.
So.
All the time. Most targets on the team.
I put him ahead of, for that reason, I put him ahead of Juju, who's 4th on my list. Solid player. Never going to develop into a number 1 wide receiver, though.
Okay.
5.
Uh-huh.
Kevin Dotson.
Whoa!
Yep.
Whammy!
Kevin Dotson. I think Kevin Dotson, by the end of the year, will have made a jump from 4 games as a starter and a 4th-round pick to the Steelers' most steady Eddie offensive lineman. He will look like a draft steal in someone that is the future of their line. Not Alan Faneca, maybe not even David DeCastro at his best, but someone that is going to have a very nice career.
Okay.
Ben is 6th.
Whoa.
Because I think best-case scenario, he's an above-average starter in 2021, and I actually think that he's closer to being below average and is pretty much
done. You might
have
ranked him 1 spot lower than me, but just know you have a long way to go to catch me in overall Ben Roethlisberger disparagement.
7 is Ebron. I could pretty much take the script that you used to describe him and repeat it, but I'm not going to do that. I put Banner ahead of Turner. I've got Banner 8.
I thought about
and
I
then I've got
about
Turner
that.
9.
I thought about that.
Because I think Zach's got way more in the tank. I think that he will be a more than competent run blocker when they ask him to do that. I think the pass blocking thing is a question mark.
He's got something to prove, too.
Turner, I think, is pretty much shot. That's why he was still available. He was bad at the end of his Carolina career. He was awful in L.A. last year. So I'm really... I could have put him dead last. but Okorafor is playing a new position, so he's 10th, and he wasn't good at right tackle last year.
Or J.C. Hassenhauer.
And Hassenhauer, because the Steelers put him number one on the depth chart, is 11.
So, is he like Justin Hartwig in Pouncey's rookie year, where like... for an ever so fleeting moment, you thought there might be a competition, but there wasn't really one?
Yeah, except I think the competition, I think those two guys are both better than what the Steelers have right now. Don't you?
What, Hartwig and Pouncey back
yes.
then?
Yes! Yeah, Green's not going to be.
I remember thinking Hartwig just absolutely sucked.
Well,
when
what
he
do
was
you
here.
Think Hassenhauer is? He's been a practice squad player and a guy that's been buried on the depth chart.
No, he's nothing. I mean, Green needs to get up to speed and quick. That whole line needs to get healthy quick. You and I did not have as much disparity here as I thought we did. We really had the same basic structure to our lists with a couple guys flipped here and there.
Is it because great minds think alike?
Yeah, I think so.
Follow us on Twitter at 93.7 The Fan, driven by Jim Shorkey Kia, Wexford, North Huntington, and Uniontown. If you are watching on the 93.7 The Fan cam at 93.7thefan.com, mention
number
two.
Just saw me take quite a swig.
I am wearing a 1992 Olympic basketball cartoon Dream Team t-shirt. My wife has wanted me to throw this t-shirt out for years.
What are you doing, Amanda?
I refuse to do it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with GameTip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.